all three elements of success, wealth is drawn to them faster. Matt Fury is perhaps America's best example of using the leverage contained in the mind-body-spirit synergy to create huge amounts of wealth. Matt is an internet information entrepreneur. He's also a world-class athlete. He was the first American to ever win the Shuai Qiao Kung Fu martial arts title in China. He was also a national champion collegiate wrestler, and now he helps people of all ages stay fit and make money on the internet. www.mattfury.com. Matt says, quote, "Believe me, when you combine physical activity with mental activity, it is as if you are moving heaven and earth simultaneously. You are pulling the future into the present in order to make the future your reality." End quote. Take care of yourself physically because you will think better, you will be more open, you'll listen better, and you'll bring more enthusiasm to what you do. The more you work out and take care of yourself, the better your circulation. Your blood is of a different character, so there's more oxygen going to the brain. And whatever your IQ is, the more oxygen you have going to the brain, the more creative thoughts you will have. It's just a biological fact. Sam recalls that years back, he was having some phobia issues. He was just not crazy about small places and got claustrophobic in elevators and on planes. He finally got counseling from a wise person who told him, "It's easier to control your body than it is to control your mind." As a result, Sam learned exercises with his body that allowed his mind to just give up and relax, and the phobia disappeared. We think we've got a job to do all day. We don't have time to work out. We don't have the luxury to be down there at the club working out today. That would be irresponsible. We need to be here in front of the computer, slamming coffee and fighting frantically to make this career work, trying to build security. But is security really what you want? What about wealth? The actor, Pierce Brosnan, recently said that he was happy to have lost the security of being James Bond every year. Quote, "When you have the security of a TV series like Remington Steele or a franchise like Bond, you can become complacent. To have the hunger and bite again and to have the desire and need to give a performance, that's a good feeling to have." End quote. Pierce Brosnan could have stayed in a lower gear. He could have ground it out, complaining, as so many actors do, about being typecast by previous roles they played. He could have complained about how older actors get dumped from great roles like James Bond. But he shifted up to the level that gave him the most energy and adventure instead. The shift that takes you up to higher energy and adventure is just like shifting gears in your sports car. You're not putting in a whole new engine, you're just shifting. This very week, our client Robert was at his computer dealing with testy clients and getting more and more down on his work. He knew he needed a shift in perspective, so he got up and took a walk outside. He looked up into a tree at a bird's nest he had noticed when he came to work, and he began whistling until he saw a little bird peek its beak and eyes out of the nest. Robert laughed and walked back inside and took a seat at his computer. He felt better, much better. When he started answering emails, he did it with a lighter touch, giving out more thoughtful and compassionate replies than earlier in the day. What had just happened for Robert? It's important to see that Robert shifted his mind, that he did something physically to take his perspective on up to a slightly higher level. The physical element is important here. The mind and the body are part of the same organic whole. So, if you lift your body up and walk it outside, you are moving the interior of your mind at the same time. You are now breathing differently. A body shift will facilitate a mind shift. Even closing your eyes and taking a deep breath can shift your mind. Closing your eyes will more than likely take your brain waves from excitable beta into a more orderly, relaxed alpha state, especially if you can close your eyes for 20 seconds and picture a peaceful scene, alpha. The point here is to know that you are in control of your sports car. Some people live their whole lives stuck in low gear and not even realizing they could shift up and out and watch their vehicle glide. When we extend the metaphor, we realize that most people don't even want to learn to drive a stick shift. They want to stay with their automatic transmission, the car that shifts for you. So their mind's version of that is to simply buy into permanent lists of what is bad news and what is good news, and then just let the shifting be automatic. Therefore, if you find out bad news, your automatic transmission just downshifts for you. You don't even have to think about it. You hear bad news and you go into a bad mood. Automatic. You now sit at your desk breathing anxiously. You have the shallow, rapid breaths of a frightened puppy. If Pierce Brosnan had been on automatic, he would have been in a bad mood the moment he found out that the studio was going to go with a younger James Bond, or the moment his TV series Remington Steele was canceled. Automatic downshift. But that's not what he did. He shifted up instead of down, and now he's gliding into all kinds of interesting movie roles. This is something you or I can do too, anytime we choose to. Just be like Robert and walk outside to look at the bird in the tree. Just getting up from the chair, stretching and walking, then going outdoors and breathing the fresher air more deeply and looking up into the tree and making that connection with the bird, that eye contact with another living being on the planet. That is shifting. Mahatma Gandhi said, quote, "The human body is the universe in miniature. That which cannot be found in the body is not to be found in the universe. It follows, therefore, that if our knowledge of our own body could be perfect, we would know the universe." End quote. The body leads the mind. We think it's the other way around, that the mind leads the body around like an old hound dog, that the mind has to talk the body out of bed every morning. Well, one of the secrets to mind shifting is that you can do it the other way. The body can lead the mind to higher gear, like Robert's did, like yours will today, when you go for a long swim, or a long walk, or play that fast-paced game of racquetball with your friend. Your mind will not and cannot stay in the same gear after that. Number 30. Think like an entrepreneur. Donald Trump said, quote, "Even if you haven't encountered great success yet, there is no reason you can't bluff a little and act like you have. Confidence is a magnet in the best sense of the word. It will draw people to you and make your daily life and theirs a lot more pleasant." End quote. One of the ways you can think more like wealthy entrepreneurs think is to learn from them, study them, get fascinated with them, enjoy them, and identify with them. There are so many wonderful books written by them. Successful people are not shy about giving away their secrets. They're proud of what they've done. They will start Starbucks and then want to share with the whole world how they did it. They'll start McDonald's and then want to tell everybody about it. There are books about how Google became a multi-billion dollar company. Amazon as well. You can find the pulse and thinking patterns of successful entrepreneurs from magazines you can read online and books you can read in the library. It will cost you nothing to capitalize on the fact that these people are anxious to share their entrepreneurial strategies. They're not secretive about it. They're absolutely thrilled with their success and love sharing it with everybody. 4 out of 5 businesses fail, and those 4 people have probably never saturated themselves with the thinking of the great minds. Most people who are trying in vain to attract wealth don't even go there. They don't even access all those wonderful ideas. They just stay stuck. They commiserate with those other 4 out of 5 people whose businesses are in the process of going under. Those are the people they gather with over the weekends rather than continuously accessing successful people via the internet or via the library. If you break down the actual French word entrepreneur, it means to enter and to take, to come in and to take. The wealth of knowledge on the internet and in the library is inviting you to come in and take it too. Sam says the main difference between who he was in his successful businesses and who he was in his failed businesses was the 700 books he read after his card was turned down in the grocery store. Sam devoured every book on success he could get his hands on because he wanted to leave no stone unturned. You can do the same. No one is holding you back from taking in all the knowledge you can. It's all there for you. And once you've digested the thinking of the great entrepreneurs, don't forget to notice that they all took action. Action. Success is a 2-step process, achingly simple. The first step is to decide what you want. The second step is to act on that decision. The best description of the second step we've ever read was written by Og Mandino in The Greatest Salesman in the World, when he said, quote, "I will act now. I will act now. I will act now. Henceforth, I will repeat these words each hour, each day, every day, until the words become as much a habit as my breathing, and the action which follows becomes as instinctive as the blinking of my eyelids. With these words, I can condition my mind to perform every action necessary for my success. I will act now. I will repeat these words again and again and again. I will walk where failures fear to walk. I will work when failures seek rest. I will act now, for now is all I have. Tomorrow is the day reserved for the labor of the lazy. I am not lazy. Tomorrow is the day when the failure will succeed. I am not a failure. I will act now. Success will not wait. If I delay, success will become wed to another and lost to me forever. This is the time. This is the place. I am the person." End quote. Number 31. Kill the Monster. R. H. Grant said, quote, "When you hire people that are smarter than you are, you prove you are smarter than they are." End quote. You have a small team trying to create wealth. Someone on your team leaves you. You need somebody else quickly to replace that person. What will you do? Will you just put an ad in the paper or go to monster.com? That would be the normal, commonplace, traditional response. Everybody does that. But if you do that, you'll get a normal, commonplace, traditional, mediocre group of applicants to choose from. when you know for a fact that even one truly great person can turn a business around. People who hire people in the traditional, normal ways get normal, traditional, mediocre people through that route. One of the things that has dramatically changed the fortune of so many small business clients that we coach is to get them mentally elevated when it comes to recruiting and hiring. We get them to be artful, creative, and masterful with their never-ending, ongoing recruiting campaign, as if people were their most important asset of all. So they don't just hire on a needs-based approach. They don't just put an ad in the paper or go to Monster.com to fill a hole in their lineup. That's all reactive. That's all needs-based. And there's nothing in that activity that is creative. If you want to create a team of all-stars who are going to produce success, then you need to stay ahead of the curve in recruiting. You can be as innovative and creative in how you recruit as you can in anything else. You want to find people who will thoroughly enjoy working with you. You never want to hire anyone who looks at the job as a place that one comes to just to get a paycheck. That kind of person will weigh you down toward the baseline of mediocrity that characterizes most teams today. Why not allow all your business acquaintances in your community to be on the lookout for good people for you? You can help people that you are already connected with to refer people to you. You'll have your clients and vendors alike always referring good people and committed to helping you build an all-star team. They will admire your commitment to always hire people as good as you are, if not better. Number 32. Become contagious. Steve Forbes said, "The real source of wealth and capital in this new era is not material things. It is the human mind, the human spirit, the human imagination, and our faith in the future. That's the magic of a free society. Everyone can move forward and prosper because wealth comes from within." End quote. Your mood is contagious. Your spirit permeates throughout the people you work with. Do you want them happier, more upbeat, and innovative? It's up to you and the mood you bring. Perhaps you think your mood is low because of your worries. Realize worrying is dysfunctional. It actually enlarges the problems you're focused on. It's an abuse and a misuse of the human imagination. It's like praying for what you don't want. It serves no valid purpose. It stresses out the people you're around. And it's completely optional and avoidable. Or as the wise 8th century scholar Shanti Davis said, quote, "If you can solve your problem, then what's the need of worrying? If you cannot solve it, then what's the use of worrying?" End quote. If you lead a big team or just one other person, make sure you are really leading. Whether you are a husband and wife, business, or enterprise, make sure you are really leading. Have your leadership be contagious. It's going to be anyway, so know that it is, and have it be consciously contagious. Why not come into your place of work optimistic, full of good news about the business and directions you are going? Why not talk about the good people you're about to bring on and new locations you are scouting? People will pick up on that and start to connect with their own inner optimist. The happier you are, the more upbeat and happy your people will be, and the more happy, carefree, and generous your customer will be. Customers pick up on the mood of a workplace. Customers pick up on the basic psychic energy of any place that they go into. And when that psychic energy is negative and down because the owner himself is full of worries, then wealth is repelled. Customers pick up on it, and they feel a little uncomfortable when they are in there. so they don't want to spend as much time there or money. Employees are a little more anxious. Because of the viral downer mood that permeates the place, they soon fantasize about working somewhere else. Soon the owner has to hire someone new, and the stress only increases. So, it's important to feel how you want others to feel. If you want employees and customers to be relaxed, happy, and giving, then be that. And if you can't be that, don't come in to work. Go do your walk by the lake with your little dog and enjoy yourself until you get up to the proper level of enjoyment, and then walk into your place of work and be the happy person who arrives at 9:30 a.m. instead of the upset person who comes in at 7:30 spreading bad vibes. We worked with a business owner named Merv, who thought he scored points with everybody in his office because he was always arriving earlier than they were. He wanted the mood and theme to be self-sacrifice. Merv got in early so he could get a jump on all the problems he wanted to worry about. Wealth stayed away from Merv until he learned to relax. If you are upbeat, it will lead your people in the contagious way that's described in John Hersey's Creating Contagious Leadership. It doesn't take scripted words. It doesn't take mission planning. It doesn't take anything other than the mood you put in the air. Hersey says, quote, "True leadership has more to do with who we are than what we do. Leadership occurs out on the skinny part of the branches, out where it is exhilarating and terrifying at the same time. The trouble is, most of us have been hugging the trunk of the tree for so long, we do not dare step out where the real rewards are found. The best way for a company to stand out is to dare to actually be that which every other company only dreams of being, a contagious leadership factory." End quote. Number 33. Be ruthless with your loved ones. Oprah Winfrey said, quote, "Declare today sacred time, off limits to everyone unless invited by you. Take care of your personal wants and needs. Say no, graciously but firmly, to others' demands." End quote. Don't let your family and loved ones abuse their access to you during working hours. It does not serve them to think you are at their command like a baby commands a bottle. It weakens them and makes them spoiled and dependent. It also makes you a nervous wreck. It takes your head out of the game. For so many reasons, almost too many to name, a constant influx of calls from your family runs counter to the creation of wealth. Of course you want them to have access. Of course if there is a problem, you want them to always feel free to call you. But we have a friend named Ramon who had let this get out of hand. We were coaching his small office team, and he was constantly getting calls. His wife called during one of our coaching sessions to ask Ramon how to spell a word. He was getting interrupted all day with such a frivolous family upset that it got in the way of the flow of wealth into his work. Nothing speeds your success faster than uninterrupted time. Yet, many people, like Ramon, no longer even know what that is. If you have this problem, stop letting your family interrupt you all day, because you don't permit your employees to interact with their families that way, do you? A full day of personal calls? When employees see you dealing with family affairs at the business, work life gets creepy for them. It gets creepy for your employees to know that your wife is on the line with a question about the dog's diet. That's off-putting for them. It changes the theme of the work mission for your employees. You can cure all this by letting your family know that unless it's some kind of emergency, you would like to channel your talking with them into your lunch break, for example, and always out of earshot of your work partners. We can't tell you how many business owners allow their spouses free rein. Every other hour, here's the owner's spouse calling. And he takes the call in front of everybody and starts saying like, "No, I think the green candles will be fine tonight." And, "Your mother? I don't care what your mother says." And it just goes on and on. And the employees feel so uncomfortable around this that it disconnects them from work altogether. Remember that it will always be uncomfortable to your work partners to be exposed to the inner life and travails of your marriage or family. And your spouse only does it because you've given her the message that it's okay. It's important to be ruthless and kind simultaneously. You'll only have to do it once or twice. Explain to friends and family that you will succeed faster at work with full focus at work. Every time they interrupt that focus, your wealth is diminished. Do they really want that? And you can also say, "When I talk to you, I want to be able to talk to you. I don't want to be distracted by business. I want to be able to focus on what you have to say. At work, I can only half listen to you, and I'm not going to do that." You can get the family to see that it actually honors them to have a special time when you talk to them, as opposed to giving them a 24/7 round-the-clock access just because you don't know how to say no. Remember, too, that the reverse of this is also true. When you're home with family, it's good to be with them. Sam says, quote, "I do a lot of work at my home, and they know that when I close the door, I'm focused on work. Now, if I want to stop working and do something with the kids, play with them, I stop work. I think multitasking is the worst thing I can do. A lot of people think, oh, I can do two things at once, and then you do a bad job at both of them. I made a determination a while ago that if I was going to be with my kids, I didn't want to be working on work," end quote. Because kids don't understand. They'll never understand why business has to be taken care of in their presence. They just think you've got something you would rather pay attention to than them, which is actually true in that moment. We were coaching a business owner named Aiden, who said, quote, "My business takes up all my time right now. I don't have time for my family." And that was because Aiden's business wasn't producing enough while he was at his business. So we gave Aiden an assignment to take one day off a week, which was totally counterintuitive for Aiden, whose workplace was like a scene from WKRP with drama and chaos swirling all around. But he rose to the occasion. Aiden found out how he could get 5 days of work done in 4 days. He realized that when he was taking personal calls and getting involved in all kinds of fiascos at his business throughout those 5 days, they were ineffective. Aiden was shocked to find out, "If work is just work, I can get everything I was doing done in 4 days." We like to use the day before vacation as an exercise for people who don't think they can do this. What they realize when they look back on the day they had right before going on vacation is that that day was an airtight, seamless day of no-nonsense efficiency, knocking out task after task with no small talk or distractions. The day before vacation, they were able to do about 3 days' work in 1 day. They were making sure everything got handled and completed prior to going on vacation because they weren't going to be there for a week. If anyone wanted to interrupt them with some non-work talk or office gossip, they would just say, "It's going to have to wait because I'm going on vacation tomorrow and I really need to get all this stuff handled because I'm leaving on a plane to Mazatlan in the morning and there's no way I can do it after that, so we're going to have to talk when I get back." And people would smile and say, "Great," and then leave. People get real ruthless with their time when they know they're about to go on vacation. So really, it can be done, and it can be done as an everyday practice. Personal life and business life don't mix well. It will almost always affect your wealth creation in a profoundly negative way. That's why most larger companies have policies about not having immediate family members working together. The reason they have those policies is because they have learned the hard way. They have learned that family members become inappropriately emotional with each other. Long-standing family resentments infect the workplace like the flu. Family members do not behave as loyal employees seeking a common financial goal. They behave like family members working on their family issues and using the job as a pretense to do their unfinished therapy. Jealousies and envy are the daily themes. Of course, there are family businesses who end up thriving, but these people use tremendous discipline, and they are the exceptions. If you've got family members who are only there because you think you've done them a favor by giving them a job and they couldn't get a job elsewhere, it really hasn't done them any favors. And in the end, a year later or 10 years later, you realize it's time for them to go. They would have been better off to have those 2 years back out in the world, becoming independent, seeking their own way, rather than just avoiding getting a real job because they knew you and they could work for you. So in the end, the more ruthless you are with your family, the faster wealth accrues to you and them, the happier everyone will be. Number 34. Seek rejection and objection. Luis Ferdinand Celin said, quote, "All great innovation is based on rejection," end quote. When a customer says no to your offer, that's a valuable moment. It's not bad news, because now you get to find out why. If you really want to understand your customer's true needs and wants, this no moment is a wonderful moment, because true and reliable information is about to come your way. Prior to this, it might have been nothing but the dance of posturing. Most people use rejection as an excuse to nurture hurt feelings, but wealth creation is a logical process. Leave the negative emotions out of it and you'll soar. Put them in there all day long and you'll tumble. When a good employee quits, is that nothing but bad news? A reason to leave work early and go to a biker bar or the bakery? Not if you are tuned to the movements of true wealth creation. If you're tuned in, you'll want to have a really wonderful exit interview with that employee so you can find out all kinds of things about how to make your place a better place to work in. Much great innovation is based on rejection. When somebody decides to turn down an entrepreneurial project that you had offered them, you want to light up, not shut down, because you can now learn more from why you have been rejected than you ever could from having been accepted. In years past, one of my clients was Dick Tomey, the head football coach at the University of Arizona. I used to make recruiting videos for Tomey's team. While working with Tomey, I noticed something unusual about him. Coach Tomey somehow seemed happier after a loss than he was after a victory. I asked him about that one day. I said, "Coach, you seem a little more on your game, upbeat, ready to go next week after you lose than after a victory. After a victory, there's something a little worrisome about your mood." And he said, "I'll tell you why that is. When we lose a game, I can't wait to get to the films because we're going to learn a lot about ourselves. There are so many things we can do in practice next week to make us a better football team. When we win a game, we really don't have as many guidelines as to what to do and what to work on. we begin to feel a little invulnerable, so there's not as much to learn from it. My function as a coach isn't as easy and exciting for me after a win. Even though I much prefer to win, don't get me wrong and don't misread those expressions, I do feel, after a loss, that now my work is clear. Now me and the coaching staff really know what to do, and now we've got an opportunity to build this team in the right direction, given what our defeat revealed. Coach Tomey's fantastic attitude can apply to all phases of professional life as well. Defeats are our greatest instructors, whereas victories can put us to sleep. The best thing you can have in any sale you are making, any product you are making, any invention, any idea, is to get a no as soon as possible in the process. Most people can't see that. Most people spend their lives trying to isolate themselves from rejection. They think it's painful. Try reversing that attitude. Go ahead and seek rejection. Seek objection. Go for it. Love it. Embrace it and study it. It will show you the way to create wealth for yourself faster than any success will. It will teach you so much because anytime somebody tells you why your idea can't work, that's just showing you the flip side of how it could work. Just turn the coin over. Thomas Edison failed in his attempts to invent the light bulb thousands of times, and people cite that example as an example of persistence, dogged, mule-headed persistence. But it wasn't that at all. Edison didn't have to keep plowing through failure after failure because they weren't failures to him. They were informative events, wonderful feedback from the world. And that's all rejection is. It's simple, informative feedback. We are free to interpret it as a negative, tragic rejection if we want, but that's optional. Number 35. Become unreasonable once a day. George Bernard Shaw said, quote, "A life spent making mistakes is not only more honorable, but more useful than a life spent doing nothing," end quote. This one is a great drill for our coaching clients who are interested in creating more wealth no matter what their profession. Every day, make at least one unreasonable request. Ask for something big. I remember one day many years ago, early in my career as a writer, I was wishing that I had 200 copies of one of my books because I had an idea for a promotion. But I couldn't afford them at the time, even at the author's rate. So I was just sitting around wringing my hands, wishing I had 200 books because of the opportunity I had with them. And at the time, fortunately for me, I was doing my stretch activity of making one unreasonable request a day. So I called the publisher and I made a request. I said, "I request that you send me, without charge, 200 books. I've got something I want to do with them that's going to help the book in the long run." And, much to my surprise, my publisher said, "Okay, we'll send them right out. No problem." A week later, 5 large boxes arrived with a total of 200 books in them, and they were sitting on my front porch, just because I asked for them. Sometimes you can call someone and request their help, and they'll jump in and help you. In your own mind, it might have been an unreasonable thing to do before you did it, but later, both of you were glad you did. The great playwright George Bernard Shaw became a very wealthy man in his day, writing powerful, popular plays. He always said that our first duty in life is not to be poor. He also said, quote, "The reasonable man adapts himself to the conditions that surround him. The unreasonable man adapts surrounding conditions to himself. Therefore, all progress depends on the unreasonable man. End quote. If you're late with a payment, call someone. Make the unreasonable request that we skip a couple of months and then we pick it up. And always remember to be okay with people declining any unreasonable request, because by its nature, it's unreasonable. But the more of those you learn how to do, the easier it is to do, and the more fun it becomes. Recently, Sam asked a director of a TV station in Canada who was interviewing him if he could have his own TV show there. "Not now," the director said. But still, it was fun that he asked, because you never know. They might have been searching that very day for something, and might have said, "Why don't you come talk to us?" So, the key here is to ask for what you want in life. You'll be amazed at how many surprises are in store for you, especially if you don't attach any meaning or significance to people declining the request. A couple of years ago, Sam had to go into the office of someone who he was selling a piece of property to. There had been a comedy of errors that led to a contractual mix-up, and the bottom line was that Sam had to obtain $353,000 that day, or the deal wouldn't be possible. It would no longer be Sam's property to offer. "It was funny," Sam said. "This guy owned a chain of fitness clubs, and he said he needed another 2 weeks to get the money. And I said I had to have the money that day. He was extremely busy with things, but I just sat there in his office. He asked me what I was doing, and I said, 'The only way I can leave this office is if I have the money.' And he said, 'You know, you've got a lot of guts. You're just going to sit here until I give you $353,000? And Sam said, "You've got it." Later that day, Sam left with a check in his hand for $353,000. People are shy and intimidated and afraid of other people, so they hold back. They don't ask for what they want. And then they get to the end of their lives and realize, lying on their deathbeds, that they could have asked for anything. Anything. Number 36. Get some help. Pema Chodron said, quote, "We work on ourselves in order to help others, but we also help others in order to work on ourselves," end quote. There is a paradox in asking for help. It appears to be a sign of weakness and surrender, when in truth, it is a sign of strength. Not asking for help only means you have a bigger commitment to your story than you do to your wealth. Your story says you don't need help, that you are a rugged individual. Your story says that you can do this on your own, a lone, solitary, admirable figure, standing tall among the weaklings. The story says you have something to prove to the world, and darn it, you're going to. But what if you were committed instead to success? What if you had no interest in building a heroic story and your sole focus was on creating vast amounts of wealth? Then you'd get help. For the same reason that Peyton Manning has a quarterback coach, Jim Carrey has an acting coach, and Celine Dion has a voice coach. When you're more committed to success than you are to looking good, you will find someone to coach you. I was confused and conflicted 17 years ago as my career as a marketing and advertising man was no longer going anywhere. I was at a crossroads, and my professional life had no focus. I had pretty much ruled out any chance of succeeding financially in a big way. Then I met my coach. That coach was the legendary Steve Hardison, who suggested that I attend a seminar with him about purpose, communication, and commitment. We were in there together for 3 days, and I created my entire future. When I got out, I proudly announced my 5-year plan to Hardison, and he just laughed. Hardison said, 5 years? "What's wrong with that?" I said. "It takes time to become well known as a speaker. It takes a lot of time for your name to get out there." "Not in my world," Hardison said. "If I'm going to coach you, we're going to do this right now. I'm not real interested in the future." Within a year, 100 Ways to Motivate Yourself was on its way to becoming an international bestseller, and I had become one of the most sought-after keynote speakers in the nation. At first, I didn't think I was ready to take my speaking and writing to the world. "I don't have enough success yet to be credible," I told Hardison. But Hardison said, "Talk about your failures. Tell the truth. You'll be the only person out there doing that. Everyone else is trying to look good." "What do I have to lose?" "Nothing. You're not even alive right now compared to who you could be, who you really are." So the months and years went by, and Hardison delivered his powerful, transformative coaching. Every time I thought I'd reached my limit financially, my coach took me to a higher level. This is why I'm such a believer in coaching. This is why I wanted to be a coach myself. I've been a living example of what coaching can do. Today, the world is full of coaches. There are so many wonderful coaches practicing right now that no one should ever fail at anything. Sam has received his own coaching from some of the best, including Dan Kennedy, who is world famous for transforming businesses from break-even to huge profits. If you're looking for a coach, ask around. Ask people you know who are being coached. Most coaches will talk to you long enough at the start for you to get a good impression of their skills. We can also recommend coaches for you to interview as well, as we now work with a large number of them. Contact us at www.stevechandler.com and we'll find you a coach. Coaches see things that you don't see. They come into your business and see immediate opportunities for greater profit. They also see things in you that you don't see. Most people we coach are living at about 10% of their potential. They're weighed down like a pack mule with negative stories about themselves, the people around them, and the world itself. As these stories are lifted, which is what good coaching does, they find new freedom and courage to act. Most people don't take much action in any given day to create wealth. They truly don't. Most of the actions they do take are survival moves, designed to defend against misfortune. Coaching takes you out of that defensive posture and allows you to open up to the infinite wealth of the universe. Number 37. Turn good business away. Joe Carbo said, quote, "Don't be too busy earning a living to make any money," end quote. Make sure that you're turning customers away who can't pay your price or can't behave. Don't just negotiate with every single one of them out of need. When you sell yourself at a lower level than you really want to, that now becomes who you are to the world. Word goes out that your work is great and your price is low. As a result, you attract more and more people looking for that great low price. You create exactly what you don't want. And you're so needy, you can't stop it. If you had been able to simply turn that business away, you would create more wealth in your life. It just didn't feel like you would. But we know the role of feelings in wealth creation. Toxic. Why not say to customers trying to jockey for a better price, "I'm sorry we can't work together right now. Maybe sometime in the future it will be a good match." Start to establish in the mind of the world what your price is. That will serve you in the long run, because either the people you turned away will now come back with enough money to use you, or they'll put the word out that's what you cost, and there will be a lot of people who gravitate toward you because that's what you cost. Funny as that sounds. Because people always associate price with value. I was once pursuing a really big business coaching contract for which I was turned down at the last minute. It turned out I was turned down because my fee was too low. And the company owner that was going to hire me said to a mutual friend, "Anyone whose fee is down at that level just absolutely cannot be as good as we thought he was. There's something wrong with him that we don't know about." I recalled, yes, there was something wrong with me, all right. I thought I was in need. I had gone into his office thinking I needed him more than he needed me. That's what was wrong with me. How many times does that happen that we don't even know about? So, turning business away is actually a good thing. It's not irresponsible. Most people have an inner philosophy that says, never say no to money. Money is so scarce, money is so precious, that if you have any opportunity for it to come in your door in any way, you must say yes. It's the only responsible thing to do, so they think. A lot of business people and salespeople have the belief that they're like the government or like a charity, where they have to accept every single customer just because they're a customer. The truth is, you don't need every customer. You just need good ones. And by good ones, we mean, first of all, the profitable ones. When people say, we'll make it up in volume, it's dysfunctional. When they say, we'll never be undersold, it's equally dysfunctional. Because what if you're undersold by a company that's going bankrupt? Yes, you can and should let yourself be undersold. Sam says, quote, "I hope everyone undersells me because I want to provide the best value and be the most expensive. When I coach clients about raising fees, they get worried that if they raise their fees, they're going to lose customers and lose that business. But it never turns out badly. The few they may lose were their biggest headaches anyway, and they always end up gaining business because of their commitment to be worth more." End quote. When Sam says he's always providing the best value, he means it. A lot of business consultants sell their teleseminars at a nice price, as Sam does, but if a member of the group misses the call, too bad. Sam makes certain each conference coaching call is recorded and made into a CD and mailed to each member so that those who miss the call can play it. And those who are on the call live have a permanent version for playing as many times as they like. It's one of the many values he adds, and he's always looking for more. His love of being the most expensive is always matched by his love of giving the most value for the money. You can do the same. Number 38. Seize the present moment. Albert Einstein said, quote, "In the middle of every difficulty lies opportunity," end quote. Stories and movies that fueled our fantasies as children made wishing and hoping seem like positive exercises. Jiminy Cricket sang to the wishful side of all of us. But now that we are living adult lives, anything that catapults the mind into the wishful future creates stress and fatigue. It delivers that overwhelmed feeling that keeps us from that one fresh, clean action that would solve everything. Because once we are in action, the world changes. The past and future drop away. Oxygen flows to the brain. Light enters where there was darkness. It is fun to be alive. Noted psychotherapist Dr. Brad Blanton has discovered that, quote, "Wishing is a way to remove oneself from what is going on now. Hope is how most of us avoid growing up," end quote. Back in the early 90s, Sam was broke and sitting on his couch in Canada watching TV. And a story came on TV about a $2 coin that just came out. They were having a problem throughout Canada because the cash register drawers were made to accept $2 paper bills, but not coins. Cashiers were going to have a tough time pulling those coins out because they'd get stuck in the corners. Sam was watching this feature story on TV, and he was totally broke at the time. And then the announcer on TV said, "We found one person that decided to make the new coin problem easier for everyone." And it was a young man that invented a little adapter that could fit into any cash register that would convert it from a bill drawer to a little coin drawer. It was just a little plastic insert, but it worked like a charm. And the first thing Sam thought was, "Aw, man, why didn't I think of that?" Like everyone does when they see something like that on TV. But then the TV said that there were thousands of cash registers with this problem that have to be fixed. So Sam did some searching around. This was in the days before the internet. And he called the TV station and he said, "Hey, I just saw that story. Can you give me some contact information for that person?" And he got the contact information and found out how he could buy a large number of the cash register insert devices wholesale. But Sam was broke at the time. He couldn't even figure out how to pay his credit card bill. Therefore, he had to get inventive about finding a way to buy a few cases of the coin-accepting plastic devices wholesale. But once he did that, he went out to different malls and retail stores and started selling the inserts to them. Soon he was making $500 and $600 a day by switching over people's cash registers. There were probably hundreds of thousands of other people who were watching TV at the same time who needed some money too, but it never occurred to them to take any action. They may have even gone into further debt to order a video about dream visualization so that they could stay right there on the couch and picture things coming true. Most people watch TV in that dreamy state, envious of all they see, wishing life was different. They haven't let themselves enter the present moment, much less seize it. They don't realize that opportunity is everywhere. There are always opportunities out there trying to present themselves to us.